Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
While most newborn twins don't need to spend time in the NICU, it's always helpful for expectant parents to be familiar with it in the event that it is needed. It's nice to have questions answered ahead of time, like, what are all those machines, and can I even hold my baby? I'm Nancy Myers, a neonatal nurse and manager at Tri-City Medical Center, talking today about the NICU, what to expect. This is Twin Talks, episode number 5.
The ultrasound shows your babies to be healthy.
What? Did you say babies? You're huge. Are you having twins?
Are they natural?
Which one do you like better?
Twins, huh? My neighbor's cousin's brother's uncle's a twin.
So can they read each other's minds?
How do you tell them apart?
Twins? You got a 2-for-1.
Do twins run in your family?
Double trouble.
You're not having any more, are you?
At least you're not octomom.
If you're pregnant with twins or you're an experienced twin parent, odds are you've heard it all before. Now it's time to hear from the experts. This is Twin Talks, parenting times two. Welcome to Twin Talks, broadcasting from the Birth Education Center of San Diego. Twin Talks is your weekly online, on-the-go support group for expecting and new parents of twins. I'm your host, Christine Stewart Fitzgerald. Have you heard about the Twin Talks Club? Our members get bonus content after each new show, plus special giveaways and discounts. Subscribe to our monthly Twin Talks newsletter and learn about the latest episodes available. And another way for you to stay connected is by downloading our free Twin Talks app available in the Android and iTunes marketplace. Are you interested in being involved with our show? We have a new virtual panelist program, and I'm going to turn to Shelley, our producer, to tell you about it.
For those of you that are following along at home, there are a number of new ways to keep connected with Twin Talks. You can follow us on Facebook or Twitter. If you're following along the conversation on Twitter from home, just use hashtag TwinTalksVP to become a virtual panelist and participate in our discussions live.
Before we get started, we've got some panelists in our studio today. So let's go around and learn a little bit about you. Tell us about your twins and how old they are and if they've spent any time in the NICU. So let's see. Let's start with Carolyn.
Yes. Hi. Yeah. My name is Carolyn. I'm 31 years old and I am a stay-at-home mom to two beautiful girls, Lauren and Kyla. They are fraternal twins, 19 months old. They were born at 31 weeks, 5 days gestation, so they spent about 6 weeks each in the NICU and are now happy, healthy, rambunctious toddlers.
Awesome. Okay, and we've got Shelley, our producer and panelist.
Hi, Shelley. I'm 30. I'm a high school history teacher, and I have identical twin boys who are almost 15 months now, Grayson and Sawyer. And I was lucky enough to have them at 37 weeks, so we just spent your standard 5 days in the hospital, and they went home with me.
Oh, awesome.
And I'm Sunny, and I've got two little boys at home already, and one is 3 years old, and one is 17 months old. I'm pregnant with twin identical girls. I'm 31 weeks right now. I'm hoping to not go to the NICU, fingers crossed. I do have a C-section that is scheduled when I'm about 38 weeks. So we're kind of pushing the envelope a little bit, but in my head, I have to have a date that's later or I feel like they're bound to come early. So I'm trying to hold off as long as
hold
I can.
On. Yes,
yes, exactly. Hold exactly. on to them.
My name is Molly Riffle. I'm 32. I'm a teacher, but a stay-at-home mom currently. I have two girls. I have a 2.5-year-old and a 6-month-old. I don't have twins, but my 6-month-old spent 80 days in the NICU, so I have a little bit of experience there.
And as your host, my twins are 4 years old, and they're identical girls. And, you know, I did have a experience with the NICU, but it was very short. I ended up having a C-section. The first girl, baby A, came out. She was fine. The second girl had just a little bit of breathing problems. And so she was in the NICU, thankfully, just for a few hours. I'm grateful that it was there. And thankfully, we didn't have to spend a lot of time there. Today, we're talking about inside the NICU, what to expect. But before we talk about the NICU, we're sitting here with Dr. Sean Dunishmond, and he's the founder of Miracle Babies.
Oh, thank you so much, Christine. I mean, this is a topic, obviously, I love talking about. You know, Miracle Babies is a nonprofit organization. We are about developing a healthier society. We believe the prerequisites for having healthy children is health of the mind and body, respect, and hope. Remember that over 500,000 babies are born prematurely every year here in the U.S., and about 3-4% of all pregnancies have congenital abnormalities. That equates to about 130,000 babies born every year that may require surgery. So many of these angels end up in the NICU, and how we started with Miracle Babies is that we found out that many parents can't get to the NICU or the neonatal intensive care unit because not every hospital can take care of these precious angels. So parents have to drive, parents have to get childcare, parents have to put food on the table. Remember, this is a life-altering moment for many people. All of a sudden they hear, what? My baby has this, or my baby's being born at 24 weeks, 25 weeks, 26 weeks. And their life is completely turned upside down. They have to live for months sometimes in the NICU. They have to come in every day, and life doesn't stop, right? Everything else goes on. So what we started doing is we raised money for families so they can be there with their children to provide breast milk to their children, to touch their children, hold their children if they can. And just that just makes intuitive sense. Every mom should be able to be with their sick child. Now, on our preventative part, we teamed up with the YMCA, and we're addressing health and nutrition, so environmental factors. We believe that children are programmed in utero, the most critical time in a child's brain development, and really, in regards to even organic disease, we believe happens in utero in the immediate postnatal period. So if we can address health and nutrition, really address this with our women, mm-hmm. children are going to be healthier. So a lot of the focus is on children. Mm-hmm. Our focus is children, but we feel that women should be the target. If women have all the tools they need, if women are healthy, mentally, physically, they will pass that on to their children. These genes are programmed, a term called epigenetics, which there are certain genes that are turned on and off. It'll alter the way they are. Christine, remember that 2-3% of all pregnancies end up with in that critical time of prematurity that we talk about, which is less than 32 weeks. Majority are after 32 weeks. So if you can reduce some of the comorbidities associated with unhealthy habits, you will have, hopefully, less babies that we as obstetricians or midwives and caretakers deliver earlier. And I really think we're going to have a huge impact to society.
I have to say, Dr. Donishmand, we really love your organization. And so we have a special club, the Twin Talks Club. We've decided we'd like to donate part of the proceeds from the club membership to Miracle Babies support of that mission.
Thank you so much, Christine. Thank you so much. That means the world to us. That means the world to our families. And it just tells us about your involvement in the community, not only in regards to education, but social services and health and nutrition. So I really appreciate it.
Well, thank you.
Thank you.
So today's topic is Inside the NICU, What to Expect. And we're talking with Nancy Myers. She is a neonatal nurse and a manager at the Tri-City Medical Center NICU. And she's been helping twin newborns and their families for, I think I heard, 36 years.
That's correct.
Wow. 36
years.
That's amazing.
So I imagine you've seen it all.
Seen it all and seen the world of neonatal nursing and the care that we can give babies in the NICU, particularly preterm babies, just advance so tremendously. And it's constantly an evolving knowledge base and technology. We're never stagnant. We're always learning more and more about how those preterm babies develop and what they need from us in the world of NICU to help sustain a normal development outside the uterus. So it's an exciting field.
And so I imagine you've got so many more success stories now than you would have 30 plus years ago.
Absolutely. Just with the development of a liquid called surfactant, which helps mature lungs in preterm infant, the ability to help babies born early and early has just constantly evolved and improved.
When we talk about this type of care, I think statistically the newborns spending time in the NICU are the minority. How likely are newborn twins going to spend time in the NICU?
Typically, we see about 1 in 5 twin births that need some sort of level of care in the NICU for a variety of reasons. It could be from prematurity itself, mm-hmm. infections. Twins born between 35 and 37 weeks can still experience challenges with feeding and jaundice and breathing problems to some extent.
So is there, a typical stay for twins that are not preterm or for preterm twins? I mean, what's What's an average
for babies born preterm? Typically, a lot of it depends on how early they were mm-hmm. and how many challenges they have during their NICU stay in regards to breathing concerns, infections, feeding concerns. We used to say in the NICU and tell parents that kind of expect your baby to go home in and around its their due date. Mm-hmm. We've kind of moved away from that because we think that sets an expectation for parents for either being too early or too late. Working around that date can be a disappointment for parents if that those babies don't go home in that time. So we look at other things and encourage parents to know that when their baby no longer needs extra heat, maintain their own temperature in an open crib, that they are taking everything by mouth and or breast. And they have no signs of infection. They don't have any more challenges with breathing or forgetting to breathe, which preterm infants do very well. Then we start to look at they're ready to go home. And a lot of times that is before their due date, anywhere from 35 weeks, what we call adjusted gestational age, mm-hmm. Up to in and around their due date. However, some depending on the course of the babies in the NICU, it may extend beyond that. It just really, really depends on each baby. They write their own chapter. We don't. Mm-hmm. So. Mm-hmm.
Now, I was thinking for our panelists here today who delivered preterm, when did your twins get to go home?
Yeah, so my twins were born at 31 weeks, 5 days after I had been on hospital bed rest for a few weeks. So we'd gotten multiple courses of steroids to help with their lung development. And they ended up staying about 6 and 6.5 weeks each in the NICU. They came home. One came home on a Monday. The other came home on the following Friday, and we had been told by the doctors to expect plus or minus 2 weeks from their due date. But the interesting thing was there was no mention of going home, getting ready. It was just meeting these milestones. Like mm-hmm. they can maintain their body temperature. They're taking some of their feeds, you know, like orally, and, you know, just focusing on those milestones and hitting them. And then all of a sudden it was Friday and they're like, I think your kids can come home on Monday. And we were like, and then of course with twins, you do face the issue. I don't know if it's a blessing or a curse that they don't always come home on the same day. For us, it was nice in some aspects to adjust to having one child at home. And then of course we thought, oh, we got this. And then you throw the second one in there.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was our experience about 6 weeks. So they came home about 2 weeks before their due date.
Oh, that's great. And so, okay, Molly, since we have you here, tell us about your experience.
Well, my daughter was born, she was 7 weeks early. She was born with a heart condition and Down syndrome. So when she was originally born, we kept being told she just needed to eat. And that was all she needed to do. And after a while, she wasn't eating and she wasn't able to take it in on her own. And they just kept saying she'll get there. And they weren't focusing on the fact that she had a heart condition. So for us, it was, they told us, you know, by your due date, you'll be home. And it was, I think it was 4 weeks after our due date, we finally got to go home, which was hard because in the beginning, they told us a couple weeks, be here a couple weeks, if mm-hmm. the most. And then it was, well, your due date. And then it was, well, maybe it's going to be a little longer. So it was a, it'd be nice if they didn't say due dates.
Wow.
More of, you know.
So it sounds like that kind of the parents really need to have, I mean, open mind and be flexible and not be focused on a particular time frame to either be set up for disappointment.
Yeah, or definitely.
Or be kind of, you know, caught off guard and wait, I've got babies coming home now.
Yeah, it's nice to focus on those small milestones that they need to hit before they can come home instead of focusing on that long, far-off goal. Because thinking about driving to the hospital once a day, twice a day for weeks on end, just as exhausting.
Oh, I can imagine. Yeah, planning for that. Well, kind of switching gears, going back to the NICU itself. So, Nancy, can you tell us about the different kinds of NICUs? I mean, I've heard there's different levels of NICUs, like kind of 1, 2, 3. And what does that actually mean?
That is correct. The American Academy of Pediatrics defines the level of NICUs based on the type of babies any particular unit is able to take care of. That's including how premature a babies are able to take care of. And what kind of staff is available to care for those babies. So, you know, having in-house 24/7 neonatology physician coverage, the level of training that all of the multidisciplinary team, including the nurses, have, the equipment that is available to care for babies in any particular NICU, So a level one is truly a unit that is going to take care of that normal newborn, or maybe a baby that is having some challenges in those first 4 to 6 hours transitioning from birth. And then from there, it does go up to and including a level four, and that's units like our own Rady Children's Hospital here in the San Diego area, who care for the sickest babies. They're able to do the cardiac surgery, the babies that require the highest level of respiratory support. Mm-hmm. We at Tri-City are a level three, meaning we keep babies that are born as early as 26 weeks. Mm-hmm. We have the training, the staff, and the technology to do that. We always partner with either UCSD or Rady Children's Hospital if a baby is in need of surgery, or the cardiac babies, babies requiring any sort of subspecialty support that our regional centers can provide in this area. So
it sounds like, for our listeners, you know, across the country, and if they're, let's say their local hospital has a NICU that's a one or two, and for some reason they find that they need to have maybe a higher level of care, so would that mean then that their baby might be transferred to another institution?
That's correct, and that just compounds the experience that the parents are now having with having a baby in the NICU. Not only is the baby in the NICU, but now it's in a NICU much farther away from a recovering mom and home and right. family support. So,
right.
So that's just an additional challenge for that family.
Right, right. So can you tell us about some of the equipment that we might see? Because I know for someone walking into it for the first time, it might be a little bit overwhelming. So what would we see, and what is it used for?
It's not a little bit overwhelming. It's very overwhelming. I think all of our moms here can attest to that. We're a unit that relies very heavily on technology. Mm-hmm. Our babies can't speak to us in words, so we rely on not only on our own knowledge and education and training, but that of equipment as well, and to provide an additional insight as to what's going on with that baby. So there's cardiac monitors that all the babies are on. There's various types of isolettes that provide not only the warmth environment that particularly our preterm babies need, but also a developmentally appropriate environment mm-hmm. to keep them away from the noise and the light that is so impacting to their developing brains. We rely on, you know, IV pumps to deliver fluids and medication. And keep in mind that every piece of technology we have has an alarm with it that helps
yes.
tell us what if that baby, you know, needs an intervention or something might be going on that we need to be alerted to right away. So you walk into an environment filled with strange equipment, lots of alarms, lots of sounds that you've never been exposed to, and then you throw the jargon that we use on top of that, and it's very overwhelming for parents. And we at Tri-City immediately try to help educate to what all that means and what it's doing for their baby, and try to help the parents focus on the baby.
Definitely. So from our panelists, what was your experience? I mean, walking into the NICU for the first time, what were your thoughts?
I mean, since I had been hospitalized beforehand, we chose to take a tour, and we got to meet with some of the NICU doctors and nurses and kind of get a feel for we were at UCSD, the different zones of the NICU, and they purposefully did not take us through the area where the sickest babies were, because that doesn't make you feel any better. And, you know, just kind of got us familiar with some of the different machines and, you know, what would happen. You know, your babies are going to be born, and then they're going to be worked on here, and then they're going to come here. So we had some understanding of what was going to happen before we went into it. But still, the first time you go down there and there are, you know, heart rate monitors and oxygen monitors and temperature monitors and IVs everywhere. And it's very difficult to just have those, you know, like newborn snuggle moments mm-hmm. with your baby with all these cords everywhere. And, you know, we were lucky that at least one of my daughters we could hold right away. And that's another complication that people have, is not even being able to have that contact with the baby as soon as it's born and in the NICU.
Mm-hmm.
but you slowly get used to what all the beeping means, and it does help learning what everything is, and then focusing on, you know, not just sitting there looking at the monitor, scanning their heart rate and everything, but just focusing on how does the baby feel? Do you feel them breathing? Do you feel them, you know, relaxing and doing things like that? Really helps a lot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We didn't actually get to see the NICU before we had our daughter because we were told that we'd have a regular birth and, you know, she'd be no complications, no problems. And so when we were told she was going to be in the NICU and I first went down there, I think it was like 4 hours after I'd had her. It was a shock. I mean, in the NICU we were in, each child had their own individual room, but to go in and hear all the noises right away and see your child hooked up to everything was just heartbreaking. And then seeing all the other babies who are, you know, smaller and in more need than yours, it's very, very traumatic, like very scary. And the noises still, I mean, still being in the hospital, the noises are just, you know, your heart starts racing. It's like, oh, I know that noise. Oh, I know, you know, it's definitely a tough thing to experience.
Wow. And I guess, and also just seeing all the people going around and, you know, working on the babies, I think, what does that mean? And so speaking of all the caregivers, I mean, in the NICU, I know there's a lot of different people that are giving care with different roles. I mean, who are they and what are they doing?
There's a tremendous amount of healthcare providers that bring components to the care of babies in the NICU. We always say it takes a village to take care of babies in the NICU. There's always the neonatologist, who is a pediatrician who has been trained to care for just the newborn and the sick newborn. So they're a specialist, and that's what they focus on. There's neonatal-trained, NICU-trained nurses who go through a tremendous amount of specialty training to care for a very unique population of patients. Respiratory therapists who are trained in the care of the neonate. Social workers, because this is not just about the baby. This is a family event. This is a family crisis. And so social workers are hugely important in our team to assure that the families have everything they need, whether it's a place to stay, the Ronald McDonald House, whether it's transportation, and how is the rest of the family, siblings, etc., coping at home. We also have occupation and physical therapists who work with the babies on their unique needs, whether it's a preterm baby needing special positioning in bed, or feeding. Feeding is a huge milestone, as you talked about, for those babies going home. And so that's a very, very big focus. Once that baby is no longer critically ill, has gotten past their breathing and their infection and all those things that they can encounter, then we settle down to teach them how to eat. And it can be a very slow, patient racking process, but our goal is always to move those babies hopefully into exclusive breastfeeding before they go home. And so we That's rely very heavily on our occupational therapists to help us through that, and last but not least, our lactation specialists and helping with that all important, as we call it, liquid gold, that breast milk and establishment of that, and then establishment of breastfeeding.
Oh, that's great. And when we come back, we're going to talk about how the twin moms can provide breast milk to their babies in the NICU with the help of those lactation consultants.
This podcast is sponsored by Skylight Frame. Mother's Day is almost here. What are you getting her? Something that shows you care. Something that makes her feel loved. Something that won't stress you out. Something like the Skylight Frame. The Skylight Frame is the perfect gift. It's a touchscreen photo frame your whole family can upload photos to, from wherever they are in the world. It's a way to share with her all the moments that matter. It sets up in seconds. You can even make sure that it's already loaded with photos when your mom opens her Mother's Day gift. And her Skylight Frame can hold thousands of the treasured photos you share. It's an easy, heartfelt way for mom to stay connected with those who matter most. It really is the perfect gift. Now, as a special Mother's Day offer for our listeners, get 15% off your purchase of a Skylight Frame when you go to skylightframe.com/easy. That's SKYLIGHTFRAME.com/easy. Get 15% off your Mother's Day purchase now at skylightframe.com/easy.
Mm-hmm. Welcome back. Today we're talking about Inside the NICU, What to Expect with Nancy Myers. And our discussion continues as we look at how moms can provide breast milk to their twin babies and how parents can bond with their newborns. So you had mentioned that in the NICU, you've got occupational therapists and also lactation consultants on hand to help the babies learn how to feed and get in the right position and take it in, as well as the lactation consultants to help kind of the mom. So how is this made possible? I mean, I think, my gosh, breastfeeding in of itself for a full-term baby, it can be a challenge. So how is this even possible in the NICU?
Breast milk production and breastfeeding in the NICU is a whole new challenge to our moms. Just experiencing a lot of times a C-section, and we know that can affect breast milk production, and then the emotional roller coaster of having a baby in the NICU. We have a goal of making sure our moms get a breast pump within 2 hours of delivery, if they're able, physically mm-hmm. able to start the pumping. Our lactation consultant actually rounds on our antepartum moms, and they watch videos of how to be an effective breastfeeding in the NICU environment. So it really starts pre-delivery for us. Mm-hmm. And then as moms are able to come to the NICU, both the nurses and the lactation consultants encourage them in the pumping and making sure that they understand the importance of it. Breast milk is medicine to our babies, and it's so important.
Definitely.
Right from the beginning, even babies that are on ventilators, that we use it for oral care, because we know just there are so many benefits to those babies for that colostrum in that breast milk. And then as we move into actually being able to encourage the breastfeeding experience between mom and baby, we start evaluating babies as early as 32 weeks gestation. Are they ready to start to getting to know that that breast and what that whole experience is for them? And it begins with skin to skin. And even with twins, as babies are physically stable enough, we have them skin to skin together with mom. Mm-hmm. They were in utero together, and they really like that closeness, as well as starting to encourage that handling of the babies together so that mom eventually can breastfeed those twins together. We usually start with one because it can be just a physical management of
balancing act.
Yes, a true balancing act, but it can be very successful. It just takes a tremendous amount of encouragement and support of that mom that she can do it, and helping her with all the challenges along the way that she may encounter with having a baby or babies in the NICU.
Yes. I mean, that's so great that you're providing that support from the get-go.
Absolutely.
It's a challenge, but to have that, to know it's possible, and even if they're not nursing directly, that they can breastfeed and lead up to that. So for our panelists, I mean, tell me, were you able to breastfeed?
Yeah, so I actually breastfed my twins for about 14 months. And they, you know, being early, I obviously couldn't breastfeed them right away. But as soon as I got back up to my room about 4 hours after they were born, someone showed up with a breast pump. And even though it was 2 o'clock in the morning, they were like, here you go.
There you go.
Yay. And so from that, it took me about 5 days of pumping for 15 minutes every 3 hours before my milk came in. And of course, you know, those first couple drops you get, you like rush them down to the NICU, and they're like, you know, they just pretend that they can give it to you, but it's not really going to come out. But you're just so happy about it. And then, you know, you start looking, and eventually I was able to provide enough breast milk for my girls to be fed with. And, you know, slowly they start to get a bit by bottle. And then we started putting them to breast probably a week or two after they were born. They had some trouble with jaundice and other things that they weren't actually getting any oral feeds for a while. And one of my girls took to it right away, actually the smaller one, and just rooted around, found what she wanted, and went for it.
Oh, that's awesome.
And, you know, there are the limits. They're so small, you can only let them try to breastfeed for so long at each session. And for a long time, we just limited it to once per day so they wouldn't, you know, burn more energy than they were taking in. But, yeah, just constant pumping and then making sure to get any rest you possibly can. eating enough, drinking enough. And, you know, the nurses and the NICUs were great. There were pumps littered everywhere. So you could just sit in front and look at your babies while you were pumping, which helped a lot. And then slowly once they were home, we, you know, transitioned to increasing the number of breastfeedings per day, probably when they were, had been home for about a month and a half. So they were 3.5 months old. I was able to start exclusively tandem breastfeeding, which got a lot easier getting rid of the pump.
Yes. And did you do breastfeeding as well?
I was in the beginning. My daughter latched on fine, but in our NICU, we were encouraged to bottle feed because they wanted to keep track of how much she was getting. So I tried to nurse her at least once a day. They didn't want to do the pre and post weight because they said it wasn't accurate. So I'd offer her as much as I could. And once we got home, I'd offer it to her all the time. She can't actually eat. She's a biter, so she doesn't actually suck. But she knows it's there, so we're working on it. But in the NICU, it was hard to try and convince our nurses that, you know, we want to try breastfeeding. Okay, you can only do it for like 5 minutes. It's like, well, she's not going to anything. That's not going to help. So we found it a little bit of a battle for us.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, we had to limit ours to about like 30 minutes of trying. But yeah, it was important, that skin to skin too. Mm-hmm. My husband and I both, you know, you come in, what outfit do you have? You just take your shirt off and hold them up to your skin, and it helps with their temperature regulation and just the warmth and feeling your heartbeat and stuff. It was a good experience.
Oh, definitely.
Skin to skin has so many physical and physiological benefits for both mom and baby, and dad too, if dad wants to experience it as well. We know that babies stay warmer, easier, and burn less calories doing skin to skin. Mom's body temperature will adjust to whatever baby needs. It does help mom's milk production. It does help the endorphins to help generate that letdown. A lot of times we'll encourage mom to pump while she's doing skin to skin. So it really, even though the baby is not ready to even PO feed or even gavage feed, feeding through a tube into their tummy, we can place the tiniest of babies even on ventilators with all those lines and cables that she talked about. We want those babies doing skin to skin for so many reasons. And a lot of times they will stay on mom's chest for 2-3 hours, and as long as baby is tolerating, that's the absolute best place for them to be.
You know, parents are the main family caregivers. Is anyone else allowed in the NICU? I mean, if there are older siblings, can they come in, or what about grandparents?
It really varies from NICU to NICU what their visitation, if you will, policy is. We don't consider parents visitors. They're there as partners in the care and the recovery of their baby. Typically, most NICUs are cautious of how young of a child they'll let in because of the risk of the colds and flus, et cetera, that kids can acquire and bring with them. We certainly encourage any older family members, grandparents, aunts and uncles, to help support the parents at the bedside. A lot of times that can be limited in number just because it is an ICU environment. Mm-hmm. And again, the noise and
you've got lots of things in
lots of things
small
going
place,
on.
Yeah.
Private room occupancy can help minimize that, but if it's a open bay kind of NICU like Tri-City is, you may see only two at the bedside.
So for the parents that are visiting, I mean, what are some of the rules and sort of the guidelines? What can they expect? I mean, in terms of, I don't know, visiting hours or, you know, the time they spent there, the type of interaction?
Again, kind of NICU unique. We encourage parents to be there as much as they possibly can with mom recovering, with other siblings at home 24/7. Now, that doesn't mean necessarily be there 24 hours a day, but our doors are always open so that any time of the day and night, they want to come and be with that baby, help care for that baby. We're there, baby's there, and we openly encourage them to do that. And again, it might at the beginning be very minimal what they can do, just touch time, maybe some skin to skin, but we encourage our parents and support our parents, and gradually as that baby gets better, to become more actively engaged in the care of that baby, from diaper changing to anything and everything their babies need from them as a parent.
Well, thanks so much, Nancy, for joining us today. And for more information about Inside the NICU, what to expect, or for more information about any of our experts or panelists, visit the episode page on our website. And this conversation continues for members of our Twin Talks Club. After the show, Ms. Myers will tell us about how parents of newly admitted babies in the NICU can keep their sanity. So for more information about the Twin Talks Club, visit our website, twintalks.com.
Today on our annoying comments people make to twin moms, we have Jamie in San Francisco. Jamie says, I have fraternal boy-girl twins. Yesterday, I almost smacked this lady for being so ignorant. She was telling her son, while pointing at my babies, look, son, that's our future right there. Those are cute boys. Are they identical? I say no. They're a boy and a girl, not two boys. Not to mention, my daughter was in a pink dress. After I tell this woman that it's a boy and a girl, she had the nerve to say, well, she would make a cute boy. Really? It took everything I had not to call her the names I wanted to.
That wraps up our show for today. We appreciate your listening to Twin Talks. Join in on the discussion by posting your comments on the Twin Talks Facebook page or calling our voicemail at 619-866-4775. And don't forget to check out our sister shows, Preggy Pals for Expecting Parents and The Boob Group for Moms Who Breastfeed Their Babies, and Parent Savers, an online support group for new parents. Next week, we're going to get tips on creating a routine for your newborn twins. This is Twin Talks, Parenting Times 2.
This has been a New Mommy Media production. The information and material contained in this episode are presented for educational purposes only. Statements and opinions expressed in this episode are not necessarily those of New Mommy Media and should not be considered facts. While such information and materials are believed to be accurate, it is not intended to replace or substitute for professional medical advice or care, and should not be used for diagnosing or treating healthcare problem or disease or prescribing any medication. If you have questions or concerns regarding your physical or mental health or the health of your baby, please seek assistance from a qualified healthcare provider.
New Mommy Media is expanding our lineup of shows for new and expecting parents. If you have an idea for a new series, or if you're a business or organization interested in joining our network of shows through a co-branded podcast, visit newmommymedia.com.
Hey, mamas. Don't forget to check out Mighty Moms. It's our online community built for new moms just like you. Not only can you connect with other moms, but you can also join us backstage for special mom-only online events. And you'll also be notified when we're recording so you can join us as a special guest. Visit our website, newmommymedia.com, and click on the Mighty Moms banner. It's free. That's newmommymedia.com. See you there.